Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Happy Black History Month. February is Black History Month annually in Canada, in the US. This is the focus that we have for education, for society, not just for schools. And in the NBA, in a sport that is, let's be honest, it's a black dominated sport, and it's fantastic, and it's so full, so expressive of culture, African-American culture, but global black culture, because the game is global, and with Canadian players, which represent, you know, Caribbean mix in the United States, there are many people who have a Caribbean background, many black players in the league have a Caribbean background. There's an African diaspora that's represented. There are African black players in the league, as we know. And so as we think of Black History Month, may we recognize, may we remember, may we celebrate that this league shines first and foremost because of the players in the league who are predominantly black. And it's a beautiful thing. And to see art, music, culture, the economy, all elevated within black communities because of, in part because of the NBA, but just around the NBA, hip-hop and fashion, business, it is really special to be a witness to this league and to be one who is a fan and one who supports the league, to be able to celebrate Black History Month. And not just to do that in February, but to do that all year round. And so I wanted to make sure that we started this podcast well and good and in the right way in this month of February. Happy Black History Month. What's going on, everyone? Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast. Bryce Diamond, February 9th, Friday, TGIF to all of you all who are enjoying the day, enjoying the mild weather. Don't know how to make sense of it all. 10 degrees in Ottawa in early February seems bizarre, but for today, not necessarily tomorrow, but for today, I will take it. I will be thankful for the milder weather as a Toronto boy. Lots to talk about. The trade deadline has just happened yesterday, 3 p.m. Eastern. The trade deadline hit. Lots of conversations, lots of movement in the league. But of course, lots happen for the Toronto Raptors. My father last night asked how I was doing. He probably is curious how all Raptors fans are doing with a season of complexity, a season that had uncertainty and still in a lot of ways will be marked with uncertainty, as we have now fully focused on the future. Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby were traded well before February 8th came around. But yesterday, Otto Porter, who might have been the most disappointing Raptor in recent memory. He came and went so quickly, and I wouldn't say much was expected, but a lot more was expected than we got. And some of that was not on him. He just had injuries that kind of plagued him. He has had a career that has, you know, had frequent injuries, you know, where he has been unavailable to the Washington Wizards, Chicago Bulls. I think he had his healthiest season in Golden State. And of course, he had such great impact, which I think is why we thought he would be such a great fit after the 2022 surprise fifth seed result that we had, because we thought, here's a veteran like Thad Young, who has played in many games and been involved in the playoffs. He's also a guy who stretches the floor, who rebounds the ball quite effectively at the 3-4 position. And he just didn't play a lot of games. I think I heard that he hit 14 total threes, somewhere around 37%. That's really tough for a team that was needing three-point shooting and wanting more veteran play, especially in clutch games and clutch moments. And unfortunately, Otto Porter, whose wife is from the Toronto area, was not able to fulfill a lot of the expectations that we had of him. And again, as I said, that's not his fault completely. I think there was probably some miscommunication on some stuff. There was probably a lack of focus and effort to some degree. Seemed like a really good guy. Maybe not as willing, from what I've heard, to put in more work on his body while he was injured or while he was recovering from injury or surgery. But again, when you get injured, you know, that's not your fault. You're not intending to get injured. So disappointing, the time that Otto Porter had with us. Thad Young was also traded, along with Dennis Schroeder. I think Thad Young was to be expected. He was getting playing time. He did have a skill set that was beneficial to the Raptors in 2022 and 2023, I would say. I thought his veteran presence and his overall view of the game and professionalism were really complementary to our young team. But in today's NBA, to have an undersized five who can't shoot the three really hindered his ability to impact the team in general, but especially as we defended under Nick Nurse and tried to play offense under Darko. And so he was traded to Brooklyn. I don't know if they'll keep him or if they'll try and buy him out. I don't know if there's a playoff team that would want Thad Young's skill set. It's possible. We'll find out. And then Dennis Schroeder. You know, I was listening to Bobby Webster on the Raptors show yesterday, and Bobby had some interesting comments around Dennis's role on the team and that being specific to the team when Pascal and OG were on the team. And I thought that was really interesting because I didn't think Dennis should be starting. And the reason why they got him and Dennis's focus was to come to Toronto to start. And when the shift was going to be toward Scotty being the number one guy and Pascal being the number two, you have two guys who aren't 40% plus from behind the arc, although Pascal Siakam since December 1st has been. It was surprising that you would bring a point guard to start on a team with Pascal and Scotty who shot the ball, you know, on his career about 33%, and I think on the season for us about 32%. Obviously, to start the season, he was quite good. I think he was around 40% after the first 15 games, and, you know, we were 7-8, 8-7 around that time. But it just wasn't good enough. And I think there were some questions as how good a playmaker he was, decision maker he was when it came to the crunch time minutes. I remember 3 or 4 games in the first 20 where he called his own number. His vision as a point guard wasn't great. Again, his shooting was limited. Wasn't a bad player down the stretch and certainly could be quite a good guard, on-ball guard, in those crunch time minutes. But it's easy to pick at him when, you know, you're a bigger team or you got bigger guys who can score, as the Celtics proved many times against the Raptors this season. And when he went to the bench, I thought that was a really good move, and I thought that's where he should have been all along. But Dennis had ambitions to start. You know, he's 30 years old. He's coming off a few seasons playing for the Lakers. He's coming off a summer where he won the world championships with the World Cup, Basketball World Cup, with Germany, where he was the guy, and he was a great decision maker, but also a great shot maker for that German team. And I think there was, you know, once the shift happened to trade OG and Pascal, I think, you know, time was running out on Dennis being in Toronto. When I talked to my father this morning on the phone and he was asking why did we trade Dennis, I forgot about Bruce Brown, and I thought Bruce Brown might be quickly traded soon after he came, and obviously yesterday came and went, and Bruce Brown did not get traded. He is still a Toronto Raptor. And listening to Bobby, I thought, oh yeah, maybe Bruce Brown is more of that veteran sixth man, or, you know, point guard off the bench. He certainly is bigger than Dennis Schroeder. He can guard more positions. He's better off the ball at guarding. He's quite strong for 6'4", 6'5". And so when you think about him in closing minutes, you think about him coming off the bench, you could see that he could be more effective than Dennis. I think he has a team option for next year, although I thought initially his contract was a 4-year deal, so I thought he had 3 more years in his contract, but maybe I'm wrong about all that. But he is 27 years old, and I think they still need veterans on the Toronto Raptors. I've said that many times. That was something Scotty needed, but I think also now something Emmanuel Quickley, Grady Dick, if Gary Trent Jr. is on this team next year, Gary would be in the same position, and RJ Barrett. So I can see if you're going to keep one of Bruce Brown or Dennis Schroeder, I can see why you keep Bruce Brown. But as Bobby said on the Raptors show, obviously, you know, they could still trade him come the draft or when free agency opens up on July 1st. No, not Canada Day, free agency day. So yeah, lots of flexibility for the Toronto Raptors as they go forward into the future, now fully putting their eggs in the Scotty Barnes basket. Although there are other players on this team who are quite talented and youthful, as we mentioned, Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett being two of those primary guys with Scotty. Kelly Olynyk comes to the Raptors, another Canadian, a veteran, a guy who I think is a really good replacement for Thaddeus Young, a guy who complements the type of game that Darko wants to play, and again, a guy who really is able to space the floor out well for Scotty Barnes and even Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett. To have another Canadian on the team, I don't know if Chris Boucher will even be with the team by year end. I'm sure there's a buyout possibility for him. I don't know if Chris Boucher has much of a future with this team. He just turned 31 years old. His three-point shooting has never been as good as the Tampa season. And realistically, his skill set, his vision and IQ on the court, it is not that of a guy like Kelly Olynyk. And when you look at now the guys that they got, Jordan Wara, and this young guy from Utah that they got in that trade with Olynyk coming over, I think it's going to be pretty hard for Chris Boucher to crack the lineup. And I think, you know, with a $9 million price tag, I think they'd rather give that or in the ballpark of $9 million, maybe as much as $12 to Kelly Olynyk rather than Chris Boucher, again, because of the skill set. Kelly is, you know, closer to a 40% shooter. He does pass the ball quite well. And although he's more undersized and less athletic than Chris Boucher, I think there's enough guys around Kelly Olynyk that they can cover for him. They can go into zone. He's a more cerebral player than Chris Boucher, where Chris Boucher is an energy guy. And I think he gave a lot to the Raptors in 2020, 2021, and 2022. But in the last 2 years, with the team shifting their focus and style, especially under Darko, I think Chris Boucher's days were numbered. And he will be the last guy from that championships team who will leave. And that is sad. But at least if he does go, whether it's, you know, before the end of this season or in the summer, at least we have another Canadian. And so we have maintained two Canadians on this roster, Kelly Olynyk and RJ Barrett. I'm not going to spend too much time on the Toronto Raptors, as I've said before, but you got to update. What are my feelings with the team? I think I've kind of said, for the most part, how I feel about where the team is at right now. I think it's the team is in a good place for the next 3 years. I think, you know, much has been said about the flexibility for this team financially and from a roster perspective. Definitely, I do believe that Scotty Barnes, Emmanuel Quickley, and RJ Barrett are a really good group of three guys who are hungry to win, get better, and they seem to enjoy each other's company. It's going to take them time. Definitely, RJ and Emmanuel Quickley had a good relationship in New York, and they continue to here. And all three guys seem to like Toronto and Darko. So I expect they will be part of this team for at least the next three seasons after this one. And that's good. We need that. We need some sort of stability and certainty going forward. And those are three good guys to think about. I think my feelings around Gary Trent and Jakob Poeltl are pretty positive overall. I don't know how long they'll be with the team. I could see both of them being here for the next two or three seasons. Certainly Jakob Poeltl has three more years on his contract. Gary is a free agent this year. But he offers them as a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter, as a guy who has great confidence and who really likes Darko and the city of Toronto, I could see them keeping him. He's, you know, Gary Trent Jr. turns 25 this year. Jakob Poeltl will be 28 this year. So they're not old guys. They still are very much a good age group for the core. And I think both Yak and Gary have some trade value too. But more importantly, with Darko's style, again, Yak, very cerebral, great passer, and just fundamentally sound. In Gary, I think right now, I would trust Gary with the ball in his hands in the last 10 seconds to make a play, to make a shot. And I think, you know, we've talked about this so many times on the pod, but just in general as Raptors fans, when you look at shooting guards who have played for the Toronto Raptors, who have been successful in the last decade, you think of DeMar DeRozan, you think of Norm Powell, Gary Trent Jr. is cut from the same cloth. And although progression, development is not linear, we've heard that said 1,000 times too over the last two, three seasons, I actually think that Gary will become an even better ball handler. I think he'll become an even better shooter and dribbler. I think he'll become wiser defensively in terms of positioning and knowing his assignment. Yes, will he be picked on by opposing teams? Sure. But that's why you have guys like Bruce Brown behind him. That's why you have guys like Grady Dick behind him, because maybe their size, or maybe if they're hot, or maybe if you need more defense down the stretch of a ball game and versatility down the stretch of a ball game on either side or both sides of the ball, you've got that. You need 8 to 10 guys to be successful in this league and to continue to win in the playoffs. And to me, Gary Trent Jr. is a top 8 player on a competitive team, on a team who can get to the quarterfinals of the NBA. And knowing the league is going to expand, and you're going to see, you know, less concentration in really good players. You're going to see less and less, you know, dominant teams and more parity in this league. Gary Trent Jr. is a perfect guy to have on your roster, whether to start, to come off the bench, or to close. And again, Norm Powell is 30 years old this year. DeMar DeRozan, I believe, is 34 years old this year. And both of those guys saw major improvements from 25 to 29, even 30. And Gary Trent Jr. can do that. He's not as explosive as either guy, but he has incredible footwork, just like DeMar did and does. And he has a great work ethic, just like those other two guys. So I'm quite positive on Gary and Yak. I don't think that they're the type of guys that win us a championship, but they're guys that could be part of a championship team. And depending on what Gary's contract looks like, if it's around $20 million, I'm okay with that. He's not a personality that's going to impede on the health of a locker room. And he seems like a real straight shooter, professional, and a guy who loves the game and is quite competitive and wanting to win. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I'm okay with this roster, knowing that there's still more moves to come, still more draft picks to come, and knowing that at this stage, it's not around, I guess you could say, the star player of Pascal Siakam, where you need to peak in 2024, 2025, and 2026. Now it's around Scottie Barnes being the number one primary player. And let's be honest, with Scottie turning 23 in August around Caravana, Scottie Barnes, his prime, his peak years are going to be when he's 27, 28 years old. And that's the same with Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett. They could have a prime that lasts till 31, 32, 33 years old. But, you know, 27, 28 is the target, which means that, you know, we're looking at Scottie Barnes, you know, his peak of his game and where we want to really be successful and be competitive for a championship being around 2028. So it takes time. It takes time. It takes time. Look at Jokic. The guy's, 29 years old this year? Look at Embiid. These are the MVPs. You look at Giannis. I think Giannis turns 29 this year as well. All of those guys are around the same age. Those are the guys who've won the MVPs the last 3-4 years. And those are the guys who are competing for championships. So that's going to be around the time that Scottie's going to be competing for championships, 26 to 30 years old. And we've still got, you know, 3 or 4 seasons till we get there. So Gary hanging around for the next 2 or 3 seasons, to me, doesn't impede on Scottie Barnes' development, this team, or Darko's desire for this team to have a certain style. So I'm okay with all that. All right, we spent 30 minutes on the Toronto Raptors. Let's move on to what's happening in the NBA. There wasn't any big trades, unless you're a big Patrick Beverley fan. Patrick Beverley went to the Milwaukee Bucks. Interesting that he's joining Doc Rivers, who he was with the LA Clippers. This is a guy in Patrick Beverley that I guess just didn't find a lot of opportunity to grow, to expand much in Philadelphia. Doesn't surprise me totally, but in Milwaukee, they need better defenders. They need a backup point guard. How much is he, going to be able to move the needle, as they say? I really don't know. So I guess that there wasn't a lot of impact there. Philadelphia getting Buddy Hield from Indiana was a really interesting pick. I think that Buddy Hield on this team, I think he could sign as a, you know, extension with Philadelphia as well. He being with Maxey, probably Tobias Harris. I would imagine they will re-sign Tobias Harris for probably $25 to $30 million, which is less than he makes right now. I could see that being really good with Joel Embiid again, whether it's this season or next season. Remember, Joel Embiid, unfortunately, has just had meniscus surgery to help restore strength, flexibility in his knee. Really unfortunate, man. Really unfortunate. This guy had some bad luck. He's had some major moments of struggle physically over the years. He's also had some many playoff series where he just hasn't been sharp enough. But this was a year where you felt Joel Embiid could be considered the best player in the NBA, certainly from a regular season perspective. He was having an even better year than last year, and I think it seemed unanimous as we near the All-Star game that he was the MVP for this year. He was just playing at such a high level. He just scored 73 points for his team. Really, really dominant play. We know what he can do offensively, but of course, we cannot forget how good he is defensively. And that just really sucks. And as we get closer to April, as teams ramp up for the playoffs, I don't know if Joel Embiid is going to be available for that playoff run. It will be interesting to see how Philly responds as a team without him in the lineup for probably 6 weeks. So 4.5 more weeks now. It's just really, really heartbreaking for Philadelphia 76er fans and of course, for Joel Embiid as an individual. And my heart goes out to him because he was having a good year. And I'm not a big Joel Embiid fan as a player, but from a human level, it really sucks. And it's, I feel for him. I have a lot of empathy in this moment for Joel Embiid. I wish him all the best in his recovery. And I hope that he can be 100% for this year. And we can see Tyrese Maxey, Buddy Hield, Tobias Harris, along with maybe Melton around Joel Embiid. Now you've got shooters. Now you've got dynamic play. Now you've got some great pick and roll partners. And, you know, that could be a team that could scare the likes of the Boston Celtics or Milwaukee Bucks in a run for the NBA title. What else is happening in the league? Well, apparently the Golden State Warriors are not done just yet. I thought 3 weeks ago they were, but Steph Curry was playing Buddy Hield's former teammates in the Indiana Pacers, where Pascal Siakam is. Tyrese Haliburton had a very pedestrian game. I would say a poor effort. Not entirely sure what happened there. Didn't see the game, but I did see that Steph had 11 threes. Golden State record now improves to 25-26. They're one game back from the Utah Jazz, who are in 10th, who are in the play-in position. They are just two games back from the LA Lakers. They are 6-4 in their last 10, and they're creeping back into the conversation of the postseason. I'm not sure how long the run can be, but when you see Klay Thompson playing better, more consistent basketball, not Game 6 Klay from 4, 5, 6 years ago, but pretty solid veteran Klay Thompson. And the more he gets time to soak up in the Pacific Ocean, the better for his health and fitness. And he's having a decent last 25 games, I would say. And now with Steph dropping 40 and them improving, who knows? Maybe in the last 30 games of the season, they can be above 500. Maybe they go on a run at one point of winning 7 or 8 games. And they could get to maybe even 45 wins and then host a play-in game. Don't know. We'll see how Sacramento responds after the All-Star break. But there are a lot of good teams in the Western Conference. It's not like the East, where after Orlando, it kind of drops off quite significantly. So I'll be interested to see. I love to see Steph play well these last 3-4 years. It really is quite impressive for a guy who's turning 36, but when you're the greatest shooter of all time, you can't be counted out. And certainly in Indiana last night, in a routing of the Indiana Pacers, Steph hitting 11 threes and dropping 40-plus points makes it fun for everybody who is a fan of the NBA. And it'd be nice to have one last dance for that team and for Steph in particular. To be honest, I would rather, and this will surprise nobody, but I would rather see Steph Curry in the playoffs than LeBron James and AD. Is that unfair to those two guys? Maybe, but at least I'm being consistent. Utah, I think it will fall off. I think they will drop off at some point and give an opening there. I don't know if Sacramento will lose like the 7 or 8 seed. I could see Dallas struggling. They just traded Grant Williams. They got PJ Washington. I think he brings an extra level of scoring that Grant Williams couldn't bring to them. He will be hungry to win because he hasn't really been on a winning team for maybe his whole career, but certainly the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons. So I could see him just having or bringing a renewed sense of energy to that team. And we think about guys like Kyrie and, of course, Luka, Lively, the rookie, and then PJ Washington. Now all of a sudden they've got some serious athleticism to balance the floor with great ball handlers and clutch scorers like Luka and Kyrie. They certainly took care of business, Dallas did, in MSG last night. They're sitting in the 8th spot. Again, I don't know if the Golden State Warriors will catch them, but I could see that being a really interesting play-in game should Dallas host Golden State in like an 8-9 game to see who becomes the 8 seed. You know, they're probably going to get Denver or the LA Clippers as the one, but if they got Minnesota, you know, anyone could win that series. That's the beauty of the Western Conference this year. It really is wide open. Although Jimmy would say the East was wide open last year from 1 to 8 too. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to shine with the All-Star game just around the corner. It'll be nice to see both Scotty and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think, with Joel Embiid out for likely the next 6 weeks. I would imagine that if Oklahoma City is in the top 3 teams, that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be the front runner for the MVP. Again, much depends on Joel Embiid's health, availability, and recovery, but I could see Shai Gilgeous with a 50-plus win season and with the ridiculous numbers he's had on both ends of the court. His defense has been great. He's been a pickpocket this year. He has shown leadership on both ends. He's made some big-time plays in some tight games against great teams. And that kind of leap is really deserving of an MVP performance. Last year, of course, he was first-team All-NBA, so he's got to be right there in the conversation if Joel Embiid is out for that 6 weeks. Of course, he'd be under the 65 games that he needs to play in order to be an MVP candidate. You could talk about Jokic being around that conversation. Jason Tatum will get praise and consideration too. But how good would it be? How good would it be to not only be the sixth MVP from outside of the United States, but to be a Canadian. And leading into Paris 2024, where we will see all the stars show up for the Olympics, it would be quite the momentum, you know, bringer for Shea to have an MVP trophy beside his name, and then to have Jamal Murray stand beside him. And who knows, you might have the MVP on Canada and you might have a two-time NBA champ to lead the backcourt and lead Canada in the underdog story after that bronze medal performance last year in Indonesia and the Philippines, where they beat the United States in the bronze medal game. Exciting. It's exciting stuff. What else is going on in the association? Minnesota, we've talked about whether they're true contenders, if we can trust them. I've heard a lot of podcasters and journalists talk about, can we trust, asking the question, using that phrase, trust around the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll see. Anthony Edwards has seemed to kind of plateau so far in the last 25 games, but you know, he's a special guy who's figuring out a way to navigate through this grind of an NBA season, 82 games. I'm sure he'll be thankful for the All-Star break. As I said just a second, a few minutes ago, I guess, before I got into the Shea conversation, Scotty Barnes is an All-Star. With Joel Embiid and Julius Randle going out, Trae Young, who I thought was a front runner with his numbers, was added to the reserves list. I thought personally, as you heard on the last episode, that Derek White, not Derek Brown, as I called him a couple times, my apologies to Derek White and his family, but Derek White, I thought he and Jared Allen should be considered 1-2. I gave a lot of praise and respect to Trae Young. Very deserving with the season he's put up and the talent and the numbers that he has beside his name. But I really did think that Jared Allen and Derek White were deserving because of how much impact they've had. But when you look at the numbers, you look at the leap, you look at his popularity, I think that has to be taken into consideration. And, you know, Toronto, whether American news outlets, sports outlets want to acknowledge it or not, Toronto's the fourth biggest market outside of LA, New York, and Chicago. I mean, I'm sure Miami and Houston want to be in that conversation, but because Toronto is also Canada in an NBA sense, because it's our only team up here, you know, a lot of people in Ottawa, Montreal, Vancouver, and all places in between the three oceans that surround our great landmass of this place called Canada, I think, you know, that had to be taken into consideration. So he did have more votes than I think everyone on the list that I talked about, except for Trae Young. I think Trae may have had a few more. But, you know, kudos to Scotty. He's had a real great leap. And when you think of the other guys in the All-Star game, guys like Julius Randle, who was great, starting around 25. You think about guys who've been on the All-Star team in the last 5 years, like Chris Middleton. His best years came after 25. You know, a guy like Kyle Lowry's best years were after he was 25. How many All-Star games did Kyle go to? I think 6. And I think every All-Star game that he was part of was after his 25th birthday. For a guy in Scotty Barnes who's only 22, to be an all-star, even if it's because a couple guys have been injured, you got to give him respect. He's a top 30 player in this league. He's an all-star caliber player. And while I don't necessarily agree with Darko, Coach Darko, that he is going to be the face of the league, I think he will be a face of the league in 2 or 3 years' time. And him being an all-star makes sense from that perspective as well. So big congratulations to Scotty Barnes and all the all-stars. You know, when I look at this team, I think part of the reason why I wanted Jared Allen to be part of it, because no one expected Cleveland to play this well, but no one expected Cleveland to play as well without Darius Garland and Evan Mobley out of the lineup for 12 to 15 games. And now that they've come back healthy, gosh, they're the hottest team in basketball. You know, the Boston Celtics are the best and most dominant team by record so far this season. But in the last 20, 25 games, it's been the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, you know, mad respect to Cleveland. The land has life after LeBron James. And hopefully, you know, that happens for many, many years. I've heard people talk about Donovan Mitchell getting traded, whether to New York or L.A. Listen, New York and L.A. always talk, whether it's the fans or the media, always talk about guys going to those two markets, of course, because of the biggest markets. When you have a red-hot player who's young and flashy and fun to watch, they're always going to talk about those guys. But Cleveland would be foolish to trade really any of their top four players. And big respect to, you know, the front office in Cleveland, the ownership, and to the coaching staff led by Mr. Bickerstaff. JB Bickerstaff has done a hell of a job. And they have had to be experimental this season and quite creative. They've also relied on the great talent that Donovan Mitchell is. So great to see them play such good basketball. They are really embarrassing the Milwaukee Bucks, who are trying to get it together now under a new coach in Doc Rivers. And I think they will not like the fact that they are where they're at. But with Joel Embiid now out and a new coach in, I think they have a chance to regroup, have a singular focus, find health, maybe get a couple guys in the buyout, and have a concerted, cohesive effort, building chemistry toward a possible championship run. We'll see. I'm going to do something fun, a little spontaneous. I'm going to put together my All-NBA team going in to the All-Star game. If I had to pick five guys, and I'm going to use positions. I'm going to use the point guard position. I'm going to use the two-guard position. I'm going to use the wing or 3-4 split. I think the forward position can easily be flexible. Probably the guard position can be too. But I'm going to also pick a center as we go into the All-Star game. Yes, Joel Embiid is available for this, but I'm going to pick five guys to say through the first 50 games, these are the guys to me that if I was having a starting lineup, you know, for the fate of the universe, that I would pick right now who would be playing. So here we go. And part of this, again, as always, is partly my bias. Partly this is just like my way of looking at the game and my style. But I'd be curious, before I do this, I just want to say, I'd be curious to know, who are your five guys for the fate of the universe? If you had to pick five guys, you know, by position, two guards, two forwards, and a center, who would they be? who are your top five for the fate of the universe in the league? Let me know. Let me know. So I'll start at the center position. As good as Joel Embiid has been, I think when I think of the centers in this league right now, from a size perspective, skill set perspective, and especially clutch minute perspective, highest leverage moments, I have to pick the defending champ, the MVP of the finals, and a two-time MVP, Nikola Jokic. He is my guy to pick at five. And it's funny to pick him because there have been times, especially 5 years ago, where I probably would have taken Joel Embiid at the five. But I'm going to take Nikola Jokic. And for me, it's an easy answer despite the season that Joel Embiid has had. If it was a 82-game numbers game, maybe I pick Nikola Jokic, but this is a one-time situation or a one-series kind of all-NBA, fate of the universe starting five, and I'm going to pick Nikola Jokic at the five. I'm going to pick at one of the guard positions, and listen, there are so many guards in this league that are good. When you think about the Eastern Conference and how good Tyrese Halliburton was to start the first 2 months of the season, you think about the season and really two seasons, that including the postseason last year, that Jalen Brunson had, and those guys might not even be in the top five. You know, the guard position is still so important. The creativity, the decision-making, when it matters most, who is going to have the ball in their hands and have to make the big plays, whether with the pass or with the dribble or with the shot. I mean, there is just so many good guards in this league. But I think if I had to take a guard here, fate of the universe, I think I have to lead with Steph Curry. This is a four-time champ. This is the greatest shooter of all time. He still has vitality. He still has nimbleness. And after last night's 40, I think he's renewed his focus. Draymond Green is back. And I just wouldn't want to play against him. And so for the fate of the universe, I'd want to trust him in a one game situation, but also in a one series scenario. And so Steph Curry is in my fate of the universe five. I'm going to take another bias approach. I'm sorry, Luka Doncic. Sorry, Kyrie Irving. I'm sorry, Devin Booker. But this year, and especially after what happened late last summer, and what is going on this year, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on my fate of the universe five. Shai Gilgeous beside Steph Curry and Nikola Jokic, golly, I don't know if Nikola would want Shai over his running mate Jamal Murray. But he might. he just might. Shai's three-point shooting is not as good as Jamal's, I don't think. But I think Shai's defensive work, a little more length, and his ability to finish at the basket with his length and height, I think he'd be a tough guy to say no to. At the three position or at the forward position, there's two positions there. I'm going to take Kawhi Leonard. Again, there are so many guys that I could take. I could take Jimmy Butler. But when I think about the size of Kawhi, Kawhi's ability to catch and shoot, to drive, to get to the line, his ability to defend, his ability to defend up, his ability to defend down, I think I'd take Kawhi if I had to take one guy. I think he doesn't need the ball as much as Jimmy, and so that's why I'd probably take him. When you think about what Jokic brings and guys that have played well against Kawhi Leonard, of course, Tim Duncan and Marc Gasol have some similarities to how Jokic plays. When you think about Harden, obviously Jokic has some similarities to the playmaking of Harden, and even Shea, kind of more ball dominant, great vision type player. So I'd take Kawhi Leonard. Again, it's a one game or one series scenario. And he's playing great basketball. He's been there before. He's a two-time champ. He's a two-time finals MVP. So I got to go with Kawhi Leonard the way he's playing this year. And my last guy, a guy whose defense has surprised me over the last 3 years, in his 30s now, a guy who can just shoot the lights out from behind the arc, a guy who doesn't necessarily need the ball, who can make good cuts, who can help you around the rim at times. And I know there's lots of guys out there. There are some good players that I'm not naming, but when you have to name five, it limits who can be on the roster or lineup. And my fifth guy is Kevin Durant. I know that Jason Tatum is not there. I know that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not there. And that seems rather foolish to many, I'm sure. And maybe Giannis should be there, and probably Giannis is an honorable mention. But when I think about how I'd want to play the game, where I'd want to score, where teams force you to score, and who has the ability of making buckets in big moments from all three levels, knowing that I've got Jokic who can do it, Shea who can do it, even Steph and Kawhi can score and playmake at all those levels, I'm going to want Kevin Durant on my team to finish the job. So that is my Fate of the Universe 5 going into the All-Star break. All five guys, of course, will be at that All-Star game. Most of those guys are on the starting lineup. There are, what, four guys? Oh, my gosh. I just named them all off. All five guys. Interestingly enough, all five guys are from the Western Conference. And again, I love Jimmy Butler. You guys know how much I love Jimmy Butler. You know how much I don't like the Celtics, but how much I appreciate and have respect for Jason Tatum. We all know how good LeBron is, both in his career and this year. But if I had to pick five guys right now, sorry, Luka. Sorry, Damian Lillard and Giannis, but my five guys, once again, Steph Curry, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and Nikola Jokic. Love to hear your five. Hope you're doing well. Once again, as I started this pod, happy Black History Month. And as we do, may there be freedom and liberty in Palestine, to the Palestinian people and to the land. Peace to you all, y'all, wherever you at. And happy Chinese New Year. I think I don't do treaty, boy. I'm on your fashion.